am Tamara Tooney. Most of you know me from Law & Order SVU, but I'm looking forward to my upcoming performance at 54 Below, so I hope you'll join me. And I'm talking to Rabbi Saul Solomon on Days Gone By, UNC Radio.
Oh, shalom, my friends. Shalom, everyone, to this radio program of the air, the Dave's Gone By Show. This is your beloved old Rabbi Saul Solomon here. And, you know, everyone who listens to this radio program is kind of a special victim, in a way. But we have a very special person on the Special Victims Unit. Her name is Tamara Tooney. She is an actress. She is also a singer. Because, yes, you know her from Law & Order. And maybe you even remember her from As the World Turns, but you can see her on stage at Feinstein's 54 Below for four different nights, October 21st and 22nd, and November 11th and 15th, doing her cabaret show, Legends from the Berg. We'll ask her what that means. Please welcome to the neighborhood, Tamara Tooney. Shalom!
Shalom, Rabbi. How are you?
I have all sorts of ailments and pains. You don't want to know from that. But how are you? That's the important question.
I'm doing pretty well, thank you.
So, let's talk first of all about this cabaret. People may not know all the work you do in television. They might have no idea that you also sing and you have a degree in musical theater. So please tell, how did this cabaret show come about?
That's correct. You know, it's interesting. When I first came to New York, all I did was musicals. And, you know, I was also a classically trained actor at Carnegie Mellon University, and I wanted to use my acting chops more than my singing and dancing. So I kind of put the kibosh, as it were, on the musical theater stuff for a while and focused on just the acting. And then years went by, and people actually forgot that I could sing. So several years ago, I was asked to perform at Feinstein's, the old Feinstein's here in New York that used to be at the Regency Hotel. And so I put together a show, and the title of that show was actually called Yes, I Sing. And it went over very, very well. So I've been doing a lot of singing in the past several years since that time. And 54 Below, the show I'm doing there, Legends from the Berg, was inspired because I am from Pittsburgh, the city of three rivers. And there is a litany of amazing entertainers, musicians, composers, singers who were from Pittsburgh. And I just thought, hello, that's like a perfect theme for the show. And it also gives me the opportunity to be very eclectic because the Stephen Foster, the father of American folk music, was from Pittsburgh. You know,
actually, so many questions are already popping to my mind. I don't know which to ask first, but you mentioned Stephen Foster. Do you have any issues singing Stephen Foster songs? Because half of them were what we would now consider and what should have been considered them, racially insensitive, shall we say?
Racially and politically incorrect.
Oh, yeah.
Say? Yeah. No, I don't have any problem singing Stephen Foster's songs because, first of all, they were the songs of the time. And secondly, if there's any word I find offensive, I can certainly switch it out for something that's a little more appealing.
right. Like darky would be not so lighty. You could change it to that.
Exactly. Yeah. We won't be doing that.
I would hope not. And I have to ask, it's all Pittsburgh musicians and composers. We'll talk about them. But please tell me you're doing at least one song by Mr. Rogers.
Oh, Mr. Rogers. Well, you know, it's so funny you should mention that because another friend of mine, Maxine Lapidus, who's a big comedy writer out in California, she did a lot of work with Joe Negri, who was part of the Mr. Rogers family.
Handyman Negri! Oh, yes!
Yes, yes! And Maxine said, there's this song that Joe Negri has written, and I got to get it to you. So I'm still waiting for that song. So hopefully, by the 21st, I will have that song. And Mr. Rogers will be represented.
Either that or do you are my friend, you are special. Do that one or something like that. Please. Come on, it's Pittsburgh. So besides Stephen...
I'm not wearing the sweater. I'm not wearing...
Do you feed fish on stage? That would be cute. you'd have a little fish tank. You throw in some food every once in a while in between songs. Gives you a chance to have a drink, you know.
Right.
It's a thought. So who else? Who else is from Pittsburgh? That you sing?
Well, let's see. I'll be doing something that Stephen Flaherty, a Broadway legend, has written. Stephen Flaherty is from Pittsburgh, and of course, you know, he teamed up with Lynn Aaron decades ago, and they are just one of the most amazing writing teams on Broadway. I'll be singing some Henry Mancini, who was from Aliquippa, which was a town just down the river from Pittsburgh.
Let me tell you something. I hate to say this. I'm sorry. Let me tell you something about Henry Mancini, whom I used to love. But the school, the university from which this radio station emanates, we have a TV station, believe it or not, on the local cable network, with which to promote our school, with which to tell all about the wonderful things the University of Northern Colorado does. Well, you put on that station 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I kid you not, all they have is a crawl of important university numbers, and what is playing in the background? Baby Elephant Walk, over and over and over again.
I'm so sorry to hear that. Well, why don't they mix it up?
I don't know.
Mancini has a catalog of music that stretches from here, New York, to Colorado.
Well, what song are you doing of his?
Yeah, I'm doing a couple of songs that I actually wasn't familiar with until, you know, I started investigating, and one is a beautiful song called Dreamsville, you know, and we do it with a little kind of funky bass line running underneath it, so it's really, really, really cool. And then there's this other beautiful song that I dedicate to our men and women in the armed forces called Soldier in the Rain, that is just one of the most beautiful, poignant pieces I've ever heard.
Was he the lyricist on these, or were these different lyricists he was working with?
Different lyricists he was writing with.
Cool. I was just curious. Now we're talking about all these songwriters and people that you're doing, obviously, in the cabaret show about Pittsburgh, but one of the looming, towering figures in theater from Pittsburgh was not a music-related person, but you certainly had a lot of dealings with and were involved professionally with, was August Wilson. Tell what you... Any memories of August Wilson? You were involved with Radio Golf. Tell.
Well, you know, as you say, August Wilson, he is one of Pittsburgh's most famous sons. And for those who may have been living under a rock for the past 20 years, he has been the most prolific playwright in the last part of the 20th century. And I had the privilege of producing his last play, Radio Golf, which was the 10th play of a 10-play cycle that started from the beginning of the 20th century. Each play chronicled each decade. And Radio Golf was the last play in that, the play of the 90s. And I was privileged to produce that on Broadway to great critical acclaim and some commercial success. And I unfortunately never had the opportunity to work with August Wilson, even though I had met August on several different occasions. But it was, you know, it was an honor and a privilege to be a part of that team.
Now, you mentioned producing, not even just acting. When you produced that show, it wasn't just, oh, you wrote a check and gave some money. Were you physically involved? What did you have to do to help get Radio Golf on Broadway and running at least for a couple of months?
Yeah, I was very much involved in that show, much more than the previous show that I joined the producing team of, which was Spring Awakening.
Oh, well.
For the same season. And my participation in Spring Awakening was more or less, you know, writing a check and getting a producer credit, whereas my participation in Radio Golf was really being actively involved in raising funds as a producer, in being part of the team from the very beginning and how to market it, how to, you know, make sure all the T's were crossed and the I's dotted. And it was my personal mission to have a larger representation of African-American audience members. Up until that point, August Wilson's plays had been attended mostly, you know, by the white theater goer, and, you know, a few, you know, not a large representation of the African-American community. So I got on the African radio, and I went to the churches, and I went to every possible thing to raise the number of black people in the audience, and I was very proud to say I was very successful at that.
Cool.
Radio Golf had the largest attendance of African-American theatergoers until Denzel decided to start doing some August Wilson. And then, of course, they line up around the block.
Well, yeah, when he did Lorraine Hansberry, I think it was his last, he did that revival of Raising the Sun, too.
Revival Raising the Sun, yeah, and then he did Fences prior to that.
Oh, Fences, that's right. But it's weird.
Yeah.
So many of Wilson's plays weren't a success financially on Broadway. I don't know why, because a lot of them were quite good and deserved it, and yet you just couldn't get people to the theater.
Well, it's interesting because it's very difficult for a play of any writer of any kind to be successful on Broadway. You know, for the most part, musicals are more successful on Broadway than plays.
Sure.
But then occasionally you get somebody like a Denzel Washington who's going to come and, you know, pack the house for 3 to 4 months, every seat sold, and then you have a play that is commercially successful.
That's true. That's the way things are now. Now, I certainly hope you will have a commercially successful cabaret evening in Legends from the Burg that is playing October 21st and the 22nd, and then again on November 11th and the 15th at Feinstein's at 54 Below, which is over on West 54th Street. It's like under Studio 54, right?
Right. It's under Studio 54, which is, you know, where all the naughty things were going on back in the day, but there won't be too many naughty things going on when I'm there.
Oh, well, that's a shame. That's funny. I just was watching an interview with Grace Jones. Remember her?
Oh, gosh, yes, of course.
She just wrote a memoir, and she's out publicizing. She looks about 30 years old. It's amazing. It's
amazing.
Stunning.
She's amazing, and I remember Grace from back in the day, and she's just, you know, she's extraordinary, and actually a friend of mine told me he just saw her perform, and she was fantastic.
Oh, wonderful. Now, let me ask, we talked again about your start in musical theater. Did you think you would wind up in television so quickly and move away from Broadway? Because once you found Law and Order and As the World Turns, boom, you know?
I just came to New York to work, and I was looking for whatever opportunity was provided, you know, and as I said, when I first got here, it was musicals, 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 musicals. Which I love, of course, I love. But it was like, you know, no, I want to be considered, at least, you know, for some television things, some film things, some straight plays even, you know. So I kind of set my sights. And it's interesting because as soon as I decided that's what I wanted to do and took the steps to make that happen by changing agents and by saying, no more musicals for a while, this is what I want. You know, I got my first movie, which was this little independent film called Sweet Lorraine. And then right after that, I joined the cast of As the World Turns, which started as a recurring role but was immediately turned into a series regular. And as most people know, I was on that show off and on for 15 years.
Wow.
And then while I was doing that show, I joined the cast of Law & Order also as a recurring character that then ultimately evolved into a series regular as well. So my career, interestingly enough, has been, even though I said no more musicals, when I started doing television, I was lucky enough to work with a writer and executive producer who came from theater, who understood the needs of the actor to constantly grow and evolve and participate. So I have been able my entire career to multitask in a way that very few actors have been able to. For example, when I was doing Julius Caesar on Broadway with Denzel Washington, we had our first preview Tuesday night. At 11 o'clock after the play, Law & Order picked me up to take me to the set to shoot Law & Order until 3 o'clock in the morning. Finished at 3. I went home. I slept for a couple hours. I was up at 5:30 because I had to be at As the World Turns at 7 o'clock
in
the morning. And then, of course, it's Wednesday now, so it's matinee day at the theater. So I finished As the World Turns about noon and went directly back to the theater for the matinee performance of Julius Caesar. So all that to say, not only did I do 3 jobs in 24 hours, but I did one of them 3 times.
Whoa. That's actually, but admit it, you couldn't have done that for more than a couple of days without collapsing, but once in a while, that's pretty cool. You gotta admit, that's pretty wonderful.
I was running on fumes, but the key really was, I had a futon in my dressing room. It had the world turns. I had a sleeping bag under my dressing table at the theater, and I had a lounge and cot and pillow set up at SBU. So wherever I could get some, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, I just took it. And that's how I got through.
Wow. We're talking with Tamara Tooney here in the neighborhood and asking her, so many different questions. I have to ask this one. This is kind of an IMDb question here. But all those years that you were doing As the World Turns, I noticed that you were on the, the As the World Turns versus Young and the Restless Family Feud edition. Do you remember any of the questions? Do you remember the answers? Who won?
I don't remember. We won once, and Y&R won once, but I don't remember any of the questions. I just remember thinking that my answers, and please don't take this wrong, were just too smart for some of the questions. I mean, I thought they would ask a question, and I'd hit that thing, and I just knew I had the number one answer. And no, the answers were a little more, I don't know.
Artichoke? How can this audience not know the answer was artichoke, for crying out loud?
Exactly, for crying out loud.
Now, a couple of higher level shows that you were involved with, or productions or pieces that you were involved with, somewhere in your bio mentions Lena Horne, The Lady and Her Music. Were you a backup singer person on her?
Singer, that's right. On her Broadway show, Lena Horne, The Lady and Her Music. It was my first Broadway show. I had just come to New York City. And I had the privilege of working and sharing the stage with the legendary Lena Horne, which was not just a lesson in performance, but it was also a lesson in discipline. And she kind of molded my work ethic. I mean, I came out of Carnegie Mellon with a very strong ethic. I came from Pittsburgh, a blue-collar town with a very strong ethic. But working with Lena and seeing her do that show, every night, 6 days a week, and the show was really all her.
Well, yeah.
She was at the time maybe in her late 60s, early 70s. I mean, I was just like, whoa. So, you want to talk about the show must go on. I really learned that lesson from Lena.
Was she personable off the stage or more sort of standoffish?
She was wonderful. I mean, we loved each other. She loved me. She was always meeting and greeting people after the show. She was very, very accessible in that way, and I adored her.
Great, great. And what about a show, a Broadway show, one of the few Broadway musicals that you have done physically, was, I think, the last production by David Merrick. It was called
Yes.
OK. Any memories of him and that production?
Well, it was crazy. I mean, it was really kind of crazy. David Merrick at that time, was a legendary Broadway producer. He had had a stroke prior to producing that show that left him, paralyzed on one side. He had to use a cane, and he couldn't articulate words. And he had an assistant who would basically interpret for him, who was this very petite Asian woman, powerhouse.
Right, and she's still alive and apparently litigious, so be careful.
right. I have nothing bad to say about her. She was lovely.
Oh.
But I remember one time we were in tech rehearsal, and David would always sit out in the house and watch and, whisper notes to his assistant or to the director or whatever. And at one point, I think there was a fly that was supposed to drop in that came in late or whatever. And Mr. Merrick got up on his cane and started heading toward the wings. And everybody's like, what's going on? Where's he going? And he came backstage and he found the stagehand who was on that particular fly and put his hands around his throat and began to choke.
Give out. Was it a real choke or was it just symbolic? Like, don't do that again.
It was more symbolic. It was more symbolic, but, everybody was like, okay, let's get David back out into the house. No charges were brought.
That's fabulous. Now, speaking of volatile personalities, but maybe not nearly that volatile. You have also worked at least one time with Al Pacino on the film The Devil's Advocate. Any Pacino?
I've worked twice with Al. My first film I did with Al was called City Hall. It was with John Cusack. And then I had the privilege of, joining him again in The Devil's Advocate.
And any stories about him?
You know, all I can say about Al is he is the consummate professional. You know, he's a joy to work with.
Oh, good.
He loves to do multiple takes, and he loves to try different things during the takes. So, you know, you're constantly engaged and participating. And he can be a practical joker. I remember on City Hall, we had a scene. He was the mayor of New York. I played his press secretary. And so I had a scene where he and John Cusack were in an office in the meeting. I had to pop my head in the door and say, you know, Mr. Mayor, so-and-so and so-and-so, blah, blah, blah. And then he says, okay, great, and I close the door and walk out. So we shoot the scene where the cameras are on, he and John Cusack, and they're talking, and I knock on the door off camera, and I poke my head in and say, blah, 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 blah. We do it a few times, great. Time to turn around for my coverage, as they say. So the camera turns around. It's set up, and we're back, and we're ready to go, and the director yells, you know, action. And so I open the door to say my lines to he and John Cusack, and they are nowhere to be found. So for a minute, I'm like, what do I do? So I just deliver the lines as if they were there, and then I close the door, and the director yelled, cut. And I hear him and Cusack laughing, and they were hiding behind, like, an armoire. In order to just, you know, see if they could throw me off. But they couldn't, because I was a professional.
You are a pro, Tamara Tooney. And people can, by the way, see what a professional singer and performer you are by coming to see your show, Legends from the Berg, at Feinstein's at 54 Below. That is happening 4 times on October 21st, I do believe. Let me actually have my calendar here. So it's a Wednesday, the 21st, and Thursday the 22nd, and then also November 11th and 15th at...
And let me make a note about November 11th and 15th.
Please.
It actually is going to be more or less a mashup of my show Legends from the Berg with my show from Feinstein's, Yes, I Sing. So the music's going to be a little different, a little more interesting, and I don't want to say more interesting.
Yeah, not that the other one is boring. Now you're telling me, don't go to the first two. Go to the second two.
Not at all.
No.
Yeah, but it's going to be a different show. So if you come to Legends of the Berg on the 21st and 22nd, do feel free to come back for something fresh and new and fun November 11th and 15th.
And what else are you working on as far as film or TV or also theater? Are you still producing, there's a show called The Frog Kiss, the musical. Is that happening?
I am still cultivating that show. It's a delightful, wonderful show. We're bringing it along, and, you know, it's a long journey to Broadway, but we're hopping along.
I get it. And what else can we see you in if people can't physically get to 54th Street?
Well, you know, I've done a couple of things. Everybody's, you know, watching things on demand now and streaming. And, you know, I did a couple shows earlier this year. I did the first episode of Zoo, the series that was on CBS, where I played the editor of the newspaper that the protagonist was working for. I also did an episode of a show called Survivor's Remorse that's on Stars. That is a hilarious, fantastic show. And I also participated in Gary Trudeau's series on Netflix, Alpha House.
Oh, wow. All these, I've got to start watching more cable in my copious spare time. All this great stuff is happening both on demand.
There's a lot of great stuff going on.
Yeah. Now, is there great stuff going on, moving away just from the professional, for the last minute or two that we have with Tamara Tooney? I know that you recently ended your second marriage. Are you dating? Are you just being by yourself these days? What are you doing with your free time?
Oh, my free time, you know, I'm living life, I'm enjoying life, friends and family, I'm not dating anyone at the moment, you know, my focus is on work and just, you know, regrouping for this next chapter of my life, and it's all looking very, very promising.
Do you see yourself doing more theater? But not just cabaret, but, you know. off Broadway.
Yes. I don't have anything on the boards at the moment, but I'm always looking for that next opportunity to hit the stage.
Excellent. And then I have to ask, have you seen the revival of Spring Awakening since you were involved on some level with the first one?
I have not seen it yet. I'm very impressed with what I hear. I hear wonderful things about it, and I just think it's an incredible opportunity for these actors with physical challenges to, you know, be on the Broadway stage. It's like an amazing thing, and I'm sure it's a dream come true for so many of them.
Well, it has been a dream come true for us to talk with the delightful, the talented Tamara Tooney, who will be at Feinstein's at 54 Below with her cabaret show Legends from the Burg for two shows, and then Legends of the Burg plus other Yes, I Sing stuff. And you make it so confusing now, I can't deal. But last question for you, and I just had it in front of me, and now I can't find it. Hold on, I'm getting there. Looking, my eyes are rolling down the... Oh, yes. You told a hilarious story about working with Al Pacino. What's your favorite or one of the funniest fun anecdotes of all those years working on Law and Order? A practical joke, something went wrong, something went right. A great Law and Order story.
Oh, wow. You put me on the spot. I can't think of anything at the moment. But, you know, it's been a very wonderful 16 seasons on this show. And, you know, I'm always curious to see what kind of crazy, you know, technical Emmy stuff I have to say, you know. You've stumped me.
Oh, my goodness.
Stumped me, Rabbi. I'm sorry. You stumped me.
Well, if they ever need a rabbi corpse, I can do the role. I'm practicing my breathing, and I can go like 20 seconds without movement. So if they ever need a dead rabbi, I'm your man.
That's the hardest thing. Dead.
Well, this has not been hard at all. This has been delightfully easy talking with the wonderful Tamara Tooney. Please go see her on TV. Go see her at 54 Below Feinstein's. And we thank you and bless you so much for being with us in the neighborhood.
Thank you, Rabbi. It's been my pleasure.
Shalom to you.
Shalom.